3, 2, 1. Log Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, May 18, 2007, I'm sorry, 2008. It is now 8:01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. I hope you are ready, folks, for a very, very interesting program. We're having a couple of gentlemen calling in, talking about a child custody case, which they are intimately involved in because it involves them. Before we do get to our program, and they'll be calling in any minute, I'd like to encourage everyone to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com, mytwocentsonline.com, and that two is a numeric two. He discusses economic issues and how they affect you. Folks, very soon, things are going to get very hot and very heavy. You should learn to protect yourself. Andy has an excellent free newsletter that he sends out via email, which I think is the absolute best in the business, and I've read them all. He also has a paid subscription, which I do strongly suggest everyone subscribe to. I would also like to remind every one of our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. I do believe that our guests are here this evening. Here we go.
Hello.
Hello. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Your name, please.
This is Pat Carroll. And Jack should be on the line, too. Jack, you there?
Okay, Pat. Thank you very much for joining us. Jack is not there yet.
He should be there any minute here, Joe.
Okay. I did not do your introductions. Let me give you a real quick introduction. I'll let you take off from there, okay?
Sure.
Okay. Folks, on the line, we have Pat Carroll, and soon he'll be joined with Jack McCowan. They are authors of the book Rabies Mom. They are rights activists. They are going to be discussing a father's right to his children. And some of the topics will include court bias and how fathers can successfully win custody of their children. Well, good evening, Pat, and thank you so much for joining us. I guess we can start, and we'll wait for Jack to come on later on. Is that okay with you?
Absolutely. Thank you, Joe.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being part of our show this evening. Jack, Pat, as a start-off point, would you just tell us something about yourself? Give us some background before we get actually into the custody case, into your book, your motivation, etc. Well, give us some background, please.
Well, I'm a single dad, recently divorced, and I have six children. My fourth child, Shannon, died in her mother's custody. She died of rabies. She was bitten by a bat, and bat got into the house, bit her. And Mom didn't do anything about it, put a Band-Aid on and some peroxide. And the kids are told not to tell Dad things that happen. And this has been going on and very detrimental to children's health and welfare, as evidenced by my daughter's untimely death. And it's been a long custody battle. You know, Mom basically turned 40, stay-at-home mom. I, had a good job and was able to support, the six children. Her mom was a stay-at-home mom and turned 40, and had some back problems and started taking prescription medication. And I believe with midlife crisis, I believe it was somewhat. And getting addicted to the prescription she was on, she thought the grass was greener on the other side, and filed for divorce. And I was powerless to do anything about getting in custody of my children. The state of Indiana is a no-fault state. Mom was a stay-at-home mom, so she basically had the right to the kids, and I didn't have any rights.
Okay, Jack, Pat, just for the sake of our listeners, tell us what is a I understand what a no-fault state is, but would you please tell us what a no? Oh, and hold on, is Jack calling in on another line?
Yes, he is.
Yes, Jack, hold on 1 second. I think he's on the line now. Hold on 1 second, please. Hello, Jack. Is that you?
Yeah, this is me, Joe.
Okay, Jack. All right. We have Pat on the other line. Good. We have two lines. Folks, this is Liberty Talk Radio. We are interviewing right now Pat Carroll and Jack McGowan. They're authors of the book Rabies Mom. They're rights activists. And we'll be talking about a father's right to his children. Please call in with your questions and comments. The number is 646-652-4620. This is Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. Please partake in this program, if you will. All right. Excuse me, Jack. Pat was just giving us some background, and then we'll come back to you, okay?
Okay.
All right. Very good. Okay, Pat, will you please continue? Explain to us what is meant by a no-fault state.
Well, states vary. Each state varies with their divorce laws. Indiana is a no-fault state, meaning that you can file for a divorce for no reason whatsoever. Just you want to be out of a marriage, and other states you need cause. In Indiana, you could be an adulteress, an adulterer. You can get away with many things, and it's a no-fault state. You just want to end a marriage. That's it. Basically, that's what the no-fault is.
So even if one party in your state, in state of Michigan, is
Indiana.
I'm sorry. Oh, Indiana. Yes. Right. Indiana is at fault. Is an adulteress or whatever. There still is no fault applies. Right.
That is correct.
Okay. Very good. Okay. Just want the clarification of that. Just in the event that some of our listeners may not have understood what that really meant. So, okay. If you'll just continue, Jack, on your summary, please. I mean, Pat, I keep on calling you Jack. There's something wrong with my brain tonight. Okay,
it'll
Pat.
Get straightened up by the end of the night.
Oh, geez. I hope you guys can square me away. Maybe it's late on a Sunday evening, and that's why, you know. Okay, Pat, if you'll please continue. I'm sorry.
Well, I was saying that, you know, that my ex-wife, who was actually Jack's sister. Jack is my brother-in-law, and...
Ex-brother-in-law.
Well, we're still brother-in-laws.
All right, no family squabble on the air, folks. Come on. Okay.
we've been family for 25 years, so I think I'm
right.
Family. Your family.
No, go ahead, Pat. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I lost my train of thought here, Joe. I'm sorry. Give me a second here. I apologize.
Why don't you ask him again, Joe?
Yes, ask me the question again, Joe. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, I guess you and Jack are on good terms, or have been on good terms, since you wrote a book together. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Correct.
Okay, so you were sort of in agreement as to what is going on. Was your wife before she went through her midlife crisis, was she considered a good mom up until that point?
Yes, she was.
Yeah. Were there any I'm sorry.
Well, according to Janine, she was a good mom. Janine always thought she was a good mom.
Okay.
This is Jack.
All right. Was there any indication that things were going awry at all, or were you just busy going to work, coming home, and maybe you were just oblivious to what was going on?
Joe, that's it in a nutshell. That is it in a nutshell. After she started the divorce proceedings and friends... family started talking to me about her. They were mentioning how quirky she has always been. Now, I never noticed it because that's what I was used to. I did. I went to work every day. I came home.
Right.
Did the things with the kids.
Right. Everything was normal as far as you were concerned.
There was, It was normal to me, absolutely.
Right.
You hit that in a nutshell. You really did.
So,
but people around me, friends, neighbors, after this started going down, they were telling me how, you know, quirky things were, and I just didn't notice. I really didn't notice.
Well, even though we told you, you didn't notice because we told you you were so in love you had your head in the sand.
Yes, absolutely.
Well,
and he did.
You know, that is so common, though. It is just absolutely
so common. We
couldn't
wake him up, the whole family. Nobody could wake him up. He was that much in love with my sister.
Yeah, well,
we could see it, but he couldn't.
I'm going to interrupt you guys for a second because I have to tell you a little, very short story.
I called
friends of mine that I worked with. Oh, I want to say I haven't spoken to these people in 35 years. Oh, it has to be. Let's say 30 years. It had to be 30, 35, somewhere around there. And I finally decided that he called a couple. No, I shouldn't have. He called once a couple of years ago, but I decided to call his home for Christmas. You know, right? And I said, I'm going to call all these people this Christmas. And I did call them. And this is the first time in 35 years that I got to speak to his wife. And I said, well, Maureen, I said, I need to tell you something. I said, you know, Ginger, my wife, left me. She was so happy for me. And now, no one's ever done this before. She said, oh, you're so lucky. And she went on and on. And then she unraveled everything. And she says, I've been holding this in for 35 years. But isn't that funny how we go through that? And people say, why didn't you see all of that? Now, this has happened before, but she did it in spades. And I was caught off guard. So I understand where you're coming from. You know? And people who haven't been there don't understand that.
I had a 20-year marriage, the same thing.
Yeah, mine was 22, and I just, you know, my wife just left me with for the guy she was working with, and goodbye, took all the stuff out. I was with the kids, and that was the end of that. But see, I wound up with custody because they just stayed with me, you know, and that was the end of that. But okay, enough of me.
Well, you put so much trust in somebody that, you know, you just don't even look, you know, in that direction. And even if it's looking at you in the face, you're not looking at it.
Pat, were
you... Because you trust that person so much. That's your other half.
That's right. Were you devastated or surprised or what? What was your reaction when your wife, when you realized at that point that she was not staying, she was going to file for divorce or she's already filed? What was your reaction to that?
Devastated is a mild word for what happened. I did not see it coming. I you know, the marriage, you know, looking back, you know, now I can see that, you know, that really wasn't, you know, a real husband-wife marriage that
right.
should have been. But when she did hit me with the news and it did sink in, I was devastated. I mean, I pleaded with her for, you know, I stayed in the house for about 4 or 5 months before she finally had, you know, the courts had me leave, even though she was, you know, half nut.
Having affairs around him.
Right.
And I was devastated. I mean, that's a mild, I can't think of a word to describe it more than devastation.
One other question. Did she blame you or did she blame herself?
Oh, no, I'm blamed for everything, and Jack is blamed for everything. You're blamed for everything. She has no blame at all for her.
Okay, all right. I'm glad to say I'm part of that
equation,
too.
She blames both of our families, too. She shunned the McGowan family out, which is my side, and she shunned the Carroll family out.
That's
unusual. She shunned both families out, and she still lives in Indiana and has no contact with either side of either family, including her own.
That's interesting.
Over 4 years now.
Yeah. Now, I know you've gone through hell. I mean, there's this, and anyone who's been through that, they know it's hell, and they don't even want to relive it or rethink it. But you went through hell. You indicated in the writings that I had, now, I did not read your book. I didn't have an opportunity to do so. But apparently you started to document everything. Would you walk us through what happened as far as the custody situation was concerned? And when did you decide that you wanted custody versus did you want custody up front, and did she reject that request?
Yeah, I did ask her for custody in the beginning, not thinking that I, you know, could do what she did raising these children. You know, she was a stay-at-home mom, but she was having affairs. She was literally tearing everything apart that I worked for 30 years in a matter of months. It was gone. I asked her, why don't you just leave me the house and the children, and go about your business. Do what you're going to do and leave the kids with me.
Hell, she was having fun. Why not? I mean, that makes sense to me, you know. She was the one out there having fun.
She can't be wrong. You know? She cannot be wrong. I don't know if you know what Munchausen's is.
No.
But I believe I believe she's afflicted with Munchausen's. It's you're not familiar with
the disease.
It's a disease. It's like a hypochondria.
I see.
And it's she's always sick, and everybody else around her is wrong except for her.
Okay.
And she will not change, and she would not give me the kids because then that means that she lost. And
okay.
She wasn't about
the kids. It was about winning or losing.
Right. Now, when it came time to plead your case for custody, did you have a case? I mean, you had a case in your own mind, and you may have been 100% right, but did you have a case as far as the court was concerned?
As far as the court was concerned, the state of Indiana, I did not have a case.
And why is that?
She was a stay-at-home mom. She had no income. She had no means of support. I was a support system.
This is before Shannon died, too.
This is 4 years ago when the divorce was. I asked for custody in the beginning, and my lawyer said, you know, you're not going to get custody because there's no grounds for it. Indiana is a no-fault state. She wants a divorce. She could divorce me because she doesn't like the color of pants I wear.
Right, but although
that's a no-fault.
She was fooling around outside the marriage. That didn't count at all.
And even though she was the one at guilt fooling around, because it's a no-fault state, she filed for divorce, and the courts naturally favor the mother.
Right.
And, you know, and she's been a stay-at-home mom forever. Why would the courts disrupt the family life of the kids, you know, because they always favor the mother.
That's correct.
If the mother is a mother.
That's right. And I can see in that case from a removed point of view.
Being a mother.
Yeah, the courts would take that position and have sympathy for the mother side of it, and for the father, well, you can go out, you know, continue your job and just bring the paycheck home, you know, and you can see the kids
exactly.
whenever you want.
Exactly.
Okay.
And, you know, mom, you can have the kids, and dad, you can see them on weekends.
Okay. So really, there was no contest there because you knew it was a blank wall that you were going to hit anyway. So you probably didn't find it.
And that's how it started, right, Pat?
Okay.
That's correct. She would have had to have agreed to give me the children, and she wasn't about to do that.
Okay. Now
that was. Go ahead.
Yeah. You went through this terrible ordeal, and you, as probably tens of thousands of fathers have. Now, give us your insight. When did you start to put this together and say, hey, we have a problem. Collectively, we fathers have a problem, and I'm going to do something about it. When did you make that decision, and how did that decision come about?
Well, that was made when my daughter contracted rabies. Prior to that, she had moved my children out of the marital residence, and she moved them in with a man who was an ex-convict. And I'm not kidding you here. The man served 6 years in prison, has no visible means of support, and my lawyer could not do a thing about it. She did not break any laws.
Right. Yeah.
She moved my children 100 miles away.
Okay.
My hands were tied. I didn't sleep at night. I didn't eat worrying about my children. But the courts would do nothing for me.
Well, let me ask you a question, I plead ignorance here, Pat, in that you have right to a visitation, and, you know, whatever. What if the wife or the husband, depending on the one that has the custody, decides, well, I'm moving to Europe. How do you share custody if you're in the United States and the other person is, you know, 1,000 miles or 5,000 miles away? Do the courts look at that at all, or is that just tough patootie?
She would not be able to move the children out of the state of Indiana unless we went to court and showed good reason. She would have to, you know,
okay.
got married to a European man, or she had a job in Europe, and then they would take that into consideration. But she could have moved them down to the southern tip of Indiana, you know, 400 miles away from me, and there's no repercussion.
Right, and they might as well be in Europe because you can't drive down
Absolutely.
There in a day's time. Right,
Absolutely.
Okay. I just wanted to get that clear.
And she did move them 120 miles away from me. And for me to go visit my children, and I never, ever missed a weekend, and she didn't have a car. I would drive 120 miles on a Friday night to go pick up my children, drive 120 miles to bring them back to my house. Then on Sunday, I would have to do the same thing again. It was 480 miles in a 48-hour period to see my children.
And you never missed a weekend.
And I never missed a weekend.
Right.
And that's part of the reason I'm on the other line.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're here, Jack, because, you know, obviously you're supporting what he's saying, and that's important because our listeners – and I missed my station identification as I normally do when I get engrossed in these conversations. Folks, I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Interviewed this evening, we have Pat Carroll and Jack McGowan, authors of Raby's Mom. They are rights advocates for the father's rights to his children. If you are listening in, and I know we have a bunch of people out there listening, our number is 646-652-4620. It's now about 21 minutes after 8 o'clock Central Time. We will be on the line for at least another 35 minutes. Please call in with your questions. We have three open lines. Let's use them. Now, Pat, what was the disposition, what were the age of your children when the divorce took place?
In November of 2003 is when she filed for divorce. My youngest child at that time was not quite three yet, and my oldest was 18. Like I said, I have six children, two boys and four girls, and the ages were 2, 4, 8, 13, 16, and 18.
Well, Pat, your child support must have choked a horse. I mean, it had to be... unbelievable for six children.
It did. It was actually 50% of my salary.
Right. Okay.
Well, actually, you know, that child support, I mean, 50% of his salary. This is after Pat lost his job at the Chicago Mercantile. He went from broker to delivering pizzas.
Okay.
I mean, that's all. That happened while this whole thing was crumbling.
Well, when your income...
That went through a tremendous downfall.
Oh, yeah.
Financially, personally, right. I can't believe we're still talking to him.
Well, you're a better man than me, Pat. I don't know if I would have. But all right,
really,
so
you know, this is Jack. I can't believe we're still talking to him.
Is that you, Pat? Is it really you? But all right, so your income went from all the way up here to all the way down there. Thus, the child support was adjusted according to your income. Am I correct?
Right. So you know they still hit him. Proportionally.
Oh, right. Yeah, they're proportionally. But now your stay-at-home, the stay-at-home mom is getting very little money.
Well, she's getting money from the state now.
Oh, now she's getting money from... So now I'm participating as well, right? I mean, the citizens of Indiana are participating. I'm not a citizen of Indiana.
Right, right. They're her paycheck.
Okay, everyone's participating. Okay.
She signed her paycheck.
That next question, before we get into the nitty-gritty of the book and why you read it, what was the disposition of your children? I mean, what was their attitude towards this? Were you the bad guy?
No, not at all. My children adore me. They adore me. They really
okay,
do.
Okay, so they didn't... yeah.
She filed for divorce in November of 2003. Had me thrown out of the house in April of 2004. At that point in time, I was giving her $2,500 cash per month to maintain the house and the children and their lifestyle.
Yeah.
By the November of 2004, 6 months after I had moved out of the house, she had not made a mortgage payment. She ran her credit cards up to $25,000, maxed them all out. She was basically spending all of her time, my children's birthdays, weekends, away from the house, two counties away with her boyfriend, who was the ex-con. By November of 2004, she lost the house. We just sold it before foreclosure, thank God. And I'm losing my train of thought here again. I'm sorry, Joe.
That's okay. Just take your time.
What I want to say here is my older children, who were 13, 16, and 18 at the time, were old enough to make their own decisions. Moved with me to Oaklawn, Illinois, into a two-bedroom apartment.
Okay.
Rather than move with their mother, because they could make that decision. My 2-year-old, my 4-year-old, my 8-year-old, I was powerless to do anything about, because the courts would make that decision for them. They were not old enough to make their own decisions.
Now, you have custody of all the children at this point?
Yes, I do.
You have custody of all the children. And how are you making
yes,
out?
I do.
How
is finally,
how are things working out for you now?
they're working out very well, extremely well. I get a lot of help from my family and from the McGowan family, you know, her family.
Okay.
Everybody is behind me and my children 100%. I'm, you know, not that I'm looking for people to be, you know, taking sides. It's just that it's very clear.
Well, that's part of the reason
who
I took
better
Pat's
parents.
Side is because of the family.
Right.
Knowing that those two kids, once Pat won custody, would be close, you know, they all live in Oaklawn, Illinois, would be close to each other. And that's exactly what happened. You know, Pat has custody. My niece lives below him in the same apartment building.
Okay.
My sister lives three blocks away. I've got another sister that lives, oh, I don't know, 3 miles away. And how far does Sue live, Pat?
About 4 miles.
Everybody's within, you know, they're taking them to school, they're bringing them back, you know, they're babysitting, they're, you know, taking them out to the show. I mean, they're you know, the girls are always busy.
That's
now.
Terrific.
It's really good, clean, wholesome family atmosphere.
Okay, now, you went through this ordeal, and believe me, I'm not minimizing it by calling it an ordeal, because I've semi-been there, and I was almost suicidal, so I know how devastating this can be. I had no support system, unfortunately. Everybody else was thousands of miles away, so I was by myself, and that didn't help at all. But so I appreciate the fact that you had, you know, the support system, and that probably helped see you through some of this. When did you decide, and what made you decide to document all of this, and then to translate that into a book, and then to translate that into a movement, if you will?
I found my first lawyer when I knew she was going to file a divorce. When it finally sunk in, I went to the Yellow Pages, found a lawyer in Indiana, Father's Rights, called the first guy without consulting anybody, without talking to anybody. This guy turned out to be a lawyer who would, you know, Father's Rights. He was a real estate lawyer. He was, you know, a bankruptcy lawyer. He was a one-man operation.
Right.
And this guy, I would call him, and he would not call me back. I mean, for serious, serious issues. You know, she moved my children. She's moving in with an ex-con. You know, my children are not going to school. This guy just would not return.
Well, he was on a closing. You know, he was making some money, Pat. I mean, let's be fair.
That's all he was interested in. I got the bills every month, but I couldn't talk to him.
Right, I understand.
And I paid him. I'm not a deadbeat. I paid him.
Yeah.
And then my daughter. My daughter Shannon contracted rabies in October of 06, and I called my lawyer literally 23 times in a week's time, and he never called me back once. And I'm telling him, my daughter's in the hospital. She's dying. She's in a coma. I need some advice. This man never called me back.
And Pat is on the phone every day during this with me in California. He's
right.
In Indiana.
Right.
I mean, every day, four times a day.
What was your advice, Jack, to Pat at this point?
Well, you need another attorney.
Yeah, okay.
You know, he's not compassionate. Get rid of him. You know, if he's not returning your calls, then, you know, get rid of him. Find a compassionate attorney. Somebody will listen to you. There has to be somebody out there.
Yeah, Pat, why did you stay with the same attorney after he didn't return your call, let's say, two or three times?
Because I was busy in the hospital with my daughter. I was literally in the hospital for 26 days. My daughter, she was in a coma. So
that's in rabies, Mom. It's all in the book.
Right.
And, you know, there's really nothing much I could do. I was in Indianapolis, 175 miles from home. So my only lifeline was a cell phone. And I called everybody, and everybody was calling me to check on Shannon.
Right.
And one of Janine's good girlfriends, a very good girlfriend, Janine being the ex-wife, said, you know, I have a good attorney. I mean, all of her friends were just concerned about these children and concerned about what was happening to Janine. Well, she said she had a good attorney for me. I took the number. I called this guy. He is strictly a family lawyer.
Right.
And now this guy, I cannot make up the what happened. I mean, if you read the book, it's just so bizarre that I couldn't make this stuff up. Anyways, he didn't know who he was dealing with. I just called him. My name is Pat Carroll. I need some help. So he didn't know what he was walking into. So I started writing everything down that had transpired over
the
course of 3 years at this point.
Yeah.
So he would know what he is getting himself into.
Right.
Well, Jack, my brother-in-law, was on the other line there. I copied him on everything.
Right.
And Jack said, holy cow. I mean, Jack didn't know every detail. I mean, he knew most of them. He didn't know every detail.
Well, what I did on this end, I contacted the judge who presided in the case. I contacted the governor of the great state of Indiana. I wrote them all certified letters. The three councilmen of Bourbon, Indiana, Child Protective Services, the Indiana State Police, that conducted an investigation and after it that did nothing. You know, if you read the book, you can't believe that. It just goes on and on and on.
But you receive response from no one.
He even wrote to Dr. Phil, for crying out loud, because there's six kids involved here. All of his kids need help,
right.
The five remaining kids, and including Pat. You know, I'm telling you this from California. Pat's in Indiana, but you all need help. They really, the whole family needs help.
Right.
And, you know, hopefully, you know, the book will help him help his family get that help.
Right.
That was a big inspiration. Nobody was helping us. We didn't just drop these letters in the mailbox. We sent these letters certified mail,
right,
saying there's real concern. And I wrote letters. Jack wrote letters. Family members, uncles, nieces, brothers, sisters.
We all wrote letters,
and nobody paid attention.
No, nobody. Isn't that marvelous?
I'm
a libertarian. I'm for no government whatsoever. In fact, I think I'm going to become an anarchist in my older ages, you know. But because I hear stuff like this, and I burn.
You just be human when you hear stuff like
this. Yeah, I burn inside. I don't even sleep at night because I get so hacked
liberal,
off.
You can just be human.
Yeah. Now, at what point did you decide to write the book? And what was the intent of writing the book? What did you expect from it?
Jack, I decided to write the book because we were getting absolutely nowhere. Nowhere. I said, you know, what we need to do is paint the picture so everybody can see that there's a huge problem in America.
Right.
And if it requires writing a book, then by God, we'll just keep on going and write a book. Well, when we started writing a book, it was a year later. That we stopped writing the book because there wasn't anything to write about. Because Pat's still a year and a half after, a year, 15 months after the judge made the decision, he was granted the kids.
Ah.
That's a long time for a judge to make a decision.
Absolutely. Well, you know, even sometimes a week is too long.
Yeah, when kids are involved.
Right.
What are the kids? What are the kids, Joe?
Right.
The kids are the most important asset this country has.
Absolutely.
Today.
Right. Right.
Not the car, the house, or the mortgage, or any of that garbage. Who gives a shit about that?
Yeah, right.
The kids, put a price tag on that.
And
they have formulas, Joe, to figure out how to split the house, the car, different formulas, and they all add up. They put it on a big spreadsheet, but here it is. And this is how much you make, this is how much they make, and this is what the bottom line is. But the most important asset, they don't have a way to do that.
Right.
Figure out where the kids should go immediately.
That's right. Yeah. Now, did the courts take any into consideration at all the fact that any of the facts involved, did the courts take that into consideration at all, or did they just simply did not want to hear it?
You
should answer this one.
They turned a blind eye to it. It's a state of Indiana, so no fault state. Had this been the state of Illinois, which is a fault state, I mean, you have to prove grounds in Illinois, but the state of Indiana, they have to follow their guidelines, and their guidelines, she wasn't breaking any laws.
Right.
According to the state of Indiana.
Okay, so she
was not breaking any laws.
Yeah. The guidelines took precedence over the child safety.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
And what Jack just said, too, you know, they have the formulas for, you know, the house, the pension,
right,
the 401k, the boat, the car.
Yeah.
Those are all formulated already in the court system, but there's no formula for the children.
Yeah.
There's no formula for the poor children.
Now,
it's amazing that this happens in America.
Did you hear, were you in contact with other fathers, other organizations that may have been sympathetic to your plight?
There's nobody out there, Joe, that I know of. That's why.
Well, there wasn't at the time. There are people out there now after we've done some research and gone through this.
Okay.
There are fathers' rights activists and fathers' rights associations and those type of things. And what we're doing is gathering that database up that exists out there right now, the Better Parent Foundation is, and gathering that information, gathering all the information, all the data we can out there, and we're throwing that into our think tank, and we're trying to figure this thing out. It's not going to happen tomorrow.
Right. Well, so you swam upstream all by yourself. You had...
Still swimming upstream.
Okay.
But, you know, and Joe, just to... You know, I didn't do it by myself. I had support from her family and from my family, but yes, you know, my kids were alone basically through all this. I mean, they were helpless to, you know, get out of the situation they were in.
Yeah, no, I didn't mean you yourself. I mean you as a family. I mean outside the family tree, basically, there was no one else.
It was horror for the whole family.
Yeah, now
the entire family.
What do you expect people to learn, or how do you expect people to react from this book? What do you expect this book to do, The Rabies Mom?
I would like it to... Are you talking there, Jack? Sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Pat.
I would like to open the eyes of the court system. You know, 90% of the time, it probably is the right decision for the children to be with the mother, the nurturer. It probably is right, but there are circumstances where it is not right.
Correct.
And we tried to tell everybody in power, and nobody would listen. Nobody would listen.
Why do you think that's
like
the case?
A woman has to try five times harder to succeed in a man's world.
Right. Yeah.
It's five times harder for a man to succeed winning custody of his kids in a divorce custody battle. Because he's a man.
All right. So your impetus here is to get the legislature really to be more understanding of specific circumstances so they don't just rubber stamp a custody situation where it may be to the detriment of the children.
That's absolutely correct.
And that might, you know, do some lobbying. Whatever it takes.
Right.
Whatever it takes to get whoever attention we need to get, that's our immediate goals.
Okay, now, is your book intended for general publication, or is it intended for lawmakers, other activists, other organizations? How are you marketing the book? To whom are you marketing it to, and what do you expect to achieve?
Is that me or you, Jack?
Well, I think the book is marketed towards parents contemplating going through a divorce, parents with children, parents going through divorce, and divorced parents, you know, with custody issues. I think it's a must read for all parents, and I think it's a must read for doctors. It's a must read for lobbyists, for people interested in the father's rights laws, and in parents. This is called a Better Parent Foundation is what we're founding.
Okay.
It's not supporting the dad, supporting the mom. It's not supporting either one. It's trying to figure out who the better parent is quickly. That's
okay.
The bottom line.
Now, what is the foundation doing? How does that operate, and how does that come? You know, I understand
the
connection.
Like I told you, we're a think tank right now, and we're trying to bring more people into our think tank. We're compiling a lot of data. Who the father's rights activists are out there, who's writing the best book about father's activities,
okay,
about parents, about parenting. There's so much to learn. And what we're doing is step by step, contacting different agencies, reading different books, and basically learning as much as we can to figure out how to fix the problem.
All right, now, have you had any face-to-face contact with any of your congressmen, for example?
No, those are the next steps. So you're the only second blog radio station that we've talked to far in this month.
Oh, by the way, we're on Blog Talk Radio.
Just came out 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, we're on Blog Talk Radio, but we're also streaming, and this is where we get probably most of our listenership from, is a streaming radio, and this will be rebroadcasted for 3.5 days. So you should get some coverage on this, and I hope you do get some feedback from this. Now, have you received?
We sure do too. I mean, whoever wants to talk to us about this, we're more than happy to talk.
Right. At the end of the program, I'm going to give you just a couple of minutes, and you can give us all the websites and all the information on how people can contact you, and hopefully that'll help you. The now I lost my question. My head is going swimming at this point.
Thank you. I'm not nuts. I'm not nuts. Thank you, bro.
Well, I guess I'm older than you are. I have more of an excuse than you do. You know, although I have a radio program, that's not an excuse.
There, Joe.
Okay.
You're bouncing from Indiana or Chicago to California.
My mind can't reach that far. What can I tell you? All right. Originally, I'm from New York City. Actually, I'm here in Tulsa, Oklahoma, but I got transferred many, many years ago with Big Oil. And people around here ask me, I mean, every day I'm asked, they say, where are you from? And I give them the same answer. I say, New York. You want to make something of it? You know, and they laugh. Usually they laugh. One time a guy swung at me, almost broke my nose. But I say it jokingly, obviously. Excuse me? I'm sorry?
They didn't ask you where you were broadcasting from. They just said, where are you from?
Yeah, that's right. They said, that's right. They said, where are you from? You know? So anyway, I try not to turn on the New York accent too thick. So I try to ameliorate a little bit. Not very successful. All right. All right, now,
once you get on a roll, it comes out.
That's right, especially when I get angry. what kind of feedback have you received? Any feedback from any organizations or any individuals thus far that are encouraging you to move forward or giving you some direction?
At this point, we have not. The Better Parent Foundation. Cool.
we have a lot of friends and family and a lot of outside support. After reading the book, and I think it's going to go forward, you know, pretty quickly.
Okay, so this is really the embryonic stage that we're talking about.
It sure is.
Yeah, we're still in the infancy stage of getting this going, but
something needs to be done, Joe. Somebody needs to do something, you know. And I don't really see anybody doing anything really positive in this arena. If we don't do something soon, it's like, you know, the green planet. You know, we're going to lose our kids.
Right. You're absolutely correct. All right, what is your game plan? How are you going to attack this step by step?
Step by step, we're working on that step by step right now.
Okay,
we're
in embryo. Okay, very good. Now, tell us what you I don't want you to read me the book, but in the book, what approach did you take in the book? And a book takes a lot of words, and what you told me would not fit in a book, obviously. So what? How did you approach writing the book?
Together?
Yeah, how did you put it together, and what does it really include, and what do people get from the book?
The book is Pat's version of what happened throughout his marriage to Janine, my sister, and what happened throughout his whole marriage, you know, how happy it was, they all of a sudden there were six kids, and, you know,
Right.
It evolves to the tragedy that that occurs in a lot of marriages.
Right.
I mean, that's, you have to read the book to. I mean, there's sex, drugs, rock and roll. I mean, every you know, death, suicide, everything is in the book. You know, they're in a normal life and in an abnormal life.
Right.
In this case, I think this was more on the abnormal side.
Right.
I'm
sorry.
All of this stuff happened. I started documenting. Pat was documenting. We were outlining. We were writing everybody like we told you about. Before you know it, we had an outline for a book. And from there, it was contacting Arbor Books in New York. They thought it was a great story. Had a writer working along with Pat and myself, and we put the book together.
Well, you're very fortunate because I know several writers, and it is very difficult today to get a publisher.
It's extremely difficult.
Right.
And if you look at our rating on Amazon.com, we've got a 5-star rating.
That is fabulous.
Right out the chute from, from what books?
Reviewbooks.com.
Okay. I'd like to take a look at that after the program. Now,
excellent. 5-star review.
How long has it been available for sale?
3 weeks.
Oh, only three? Boy, this is really new. This is groundbreaking stuff.
Right.
This is really new. Okay.
Pat's only had custody of the kids since February?
February 2nd.
Okay. Okay. So you're writing this book while going... Geez, this is an amazing story. This really is. It should be a very interesting book. How many, out of curiosity, how many pages is the book?
208.
208. I was going to guess less than that, but it must be a very, very interesting story. It must
be. It's an interesting book. It's easy reading. We've had a lot of different people read it. Everybody's told us the same thing. It's a sad book. It's easy reading. Yeah. They've learned a lot from it.
Yeah. Have you thought of how you're going to approach the legislatures?
No. Those. We'll be talking more about that in the upcoming interviews.
Okay. You know, you may want to start with, well, obviously you have to start with your state people. But you may want to even but give a book to them when you visit them, obviously, and things like that. I'm sure you've thought
absolutely.
Of that, you know.
I mean, and we're working on book signings right now. I have a book signing scheduled with Barnes and Noble here in California for August 23rd, and Pat is scheduling book signings there in Chicago.
Now, Jack, do you come over to Indiana or are you doing this all remotely?
It's all remotely, and it wouldn't be Indiana; it'd be Chicago. My hometown is Chicago, and Pat resides in Chicago right now. He's out of Indiana. He was married in Chicago. They migrated to Indiana. That's where problems started. He's back out of Indiana, and I'm glad to see it.
Yeah, I just received an instant mail. They just flashed this on me. And I have to admit, I am so computer unsavvy. It's unbelievable. And they put me in a studio with three computer screens. And each computer screen has four boxes in them. They all do different things. And they say, just watch that stuff. You know, just watch it. So this is what I'm attempting to do. And I have an instant message from a gym from Pennsylvania, and he says, hey, I almost lost my father's rights in the state of PA. And Jim, if you're out there listening, would you please call in? And I think he is calling in. I have a call here. Hold on a second. This may be him. This is Liberty Talk Radio. This is Joe Cristiano. Is this Phil? Jim? Hello? Hello, you're on the air. Hello?
This is Jack.
No, they hung up on it. That may have been him, but for some reason we had a bad connection and he hung up. Anyway, I wish, Jim, if you're out there, it's Jim D7A, whoever that is. But if you would just call in 646-652-4620, we'll pick up those lines immediately so we do not lose you the second time around. Please redial 646-652-4620. We only have about 10 more minutes, so please do call in now. We'd love to hear your comments. Okay. Back to our conversation. Have you been on any of the local television programs? Are you considering that?
We haven't been on yet. Our publicist, Phoenix, we'd really leave that up to them.
Okay, so you have someone who is going to try to tie all these interviews and all this together for you.
Exactly.
Okay.
We'd be lost without it.
Okay, that's terrific. Okay, because too many people try to do everything on their own. You know, they self-publish a book and then they want to do everything on their own, and I haven't seen one.
We're so tired after self-publishing, we needed a little help at the end. It was all space after that.
Yeah. Now, did you have any, you had a writer assist you in writing the book, is that correct?
We did.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah. Is this the first time that you've written a book, or have you had any experience doing this before?
The very first time.
Boy, you guys are groundbreakers, aren't you?
The book is emotionally inspired. You know, that's why we wrote the book. I mean, it was just so emotional.
How difficult was it to write the book?
Well, 8 years ago, I had to unplug my mother from life support, and that was the toughest thing I ever had to do in my life.
Okay. Hold on one second.
Go against my sister.
Jack, let me, I just want to hold on. We have a caller. Please hold on.
Okay.
Caller, you're on the line. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
My name's James. Actually, I'm the instant messenger. I'm Jim, and I'm from New York City.
Oh, okay. James, your comments, please, or questions?
What happened is my ex in the state of Pennsylvania, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, there's a law in the books where if a mother or the custodial parent denies, pretty much the non-custodial parent doesn't see his kid in 6 months, he could lose. Hello?
Hello, yes, we're still here.
Oh, okay. Well, in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, actually, I'm from New York City, but my ex-wife moved to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania because their divorce laws are actually just as easy as Indiana. So what happened is there also has laws that are so minute compared to New York. I don't know, Joe's from New York. In New York, we actually have very hard divorce laws. Probably the hardest in the nation. Pennsylvania has probably easier divorce laws than most of the nation. So pretty much what happened was my ex-wife denied me for 6 months. I did not know there was a clause in the Pennsylvania law book that then she could try to terminate my rights. So pretty much for 6 months, I couldn't see my kid because she'd just say, oh, you can't see her this weekend or whatever. And I was stupid enough thinking I could do the court thing by myself.
Yeah.
And it's all a game of lawyers.
You didn't document anything.
Oh, I documented everything, and that's how I won my case.
Well, thank God you did document it. That was another thing that's really important, is to document everything.
Yes, that's what I found out. I mean, I've been doing it the whole time, but the problem is, I went for the first time in 2003 to do something about it, and what happened was I got the wrong court time. I got one piece of paper. She got another piece of paper. Mine said 1 o'clock. Hers said 10 o'clock.
Hmm.
So it was a mistake on the court side. They admitted to it, but they said everything would stay the same. Hence, then a couple of years later, 2006, my ex-wife and she got remarried and everything. And she then what happened was they went to marriage counseling or something like that. That's what the evaluation said later on. And what suspiciously, their last counseling session ended. And then that's when my trouble started, where I could not see my daughter. And in Pennsylvania, if the non-custodial parent does not see his kid for a minimum of 6 months, they could start termination process of his rights. They tried, I said no, and we went to court battle for a year, and now everything is developing better, but of course, not seeing my kid for more than a year, things are kind of like awkward and stuff, but everything, I got an awesome lawyer. I mean, I got recommendations from a father's right group with this guy.
If you're thinking, how time flies when you're having fun. There's no fun about this. And they just drag the time on.
Yeah.
What?
My thing is, where was due process? I mean,
they figured the money thing out in about 10 minutes.
Oh yeah. I mean, the court thing. I mean, since I'm a New York resident, I go by New York law. There, that was figured out. Bam, 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 and it's all a numbers game then.
What do you
I play
think
number
that,
games.
Why do you think that's so? Why do they? I mean, the people in the court are people. They have children, most likely, and yet they can't make that transition in thought, saying that there's a problem here, and there are people, and sometimes several people, suffering just because we're dragging our feet.
They make themselves cold to that. It's like a drill instructor in the Marine Corps. They condition themselves for that, these judges do, in the same sense.
I guess that's true. I guess they see so much of it after a while, it's...
Absolutely, they're callous. They're callous, totally callous, like a hard-nosed attorney.
Well, right. If I could interject here for a minute, this is Pat again. A lot of these judges, lawyers, are sympathetic, but the laws are on the book that they can't variate from the laws. They can't say, you're the better dad, you're the better parent, so yes, you get the kids. They have to go by the guidelines.
We're talking about the
guidelines
judges.
Need to be changed.
Right, so you're going to need
the
legislative
judges,
changes.
They all go to the same school.
Right. Well, yeah, but the thing is that the government tries to... I mean, the minute you get divorced, the government wants control of your life because you're no longer a united household, so they want you to... So they said, you guys couldn't handle your children. Here
and
comes the government.
What the foundation is about, that's another good point, is to get the government out of personal lives. you know, to get a nonprofit organization involved, you know, with some people that are on the staff that actually get paid a good paycheck,
right.
You know, that are really concerned about, you know, what they're doing, you know, and I don't see that in the Child Protective Services. I don't see that, you know, going through this whole system.
Right.
No, I don't see that either. I mean, in New York, I mean, I've had friends, a friend of mine that had her child taken away from her and so forth, and all the child support agency says is this, 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 and this. I mean, and I don't know what went wrong. I mean, I dated her briefly, and, you know, I got into the mess, and it wasn't fun, and how I see how they operated was they actually act like the Gestapo. I mean, I have to give not to be mean, but actually that's a lie because the Gestapo actually acted better. I mean, the Gestapo, at least, you knew
they were the Gestapo. You're thinking these people are friendly.
Yeah.
They're on your side.
Yeah.
That's not fair, as we all know. We've heard that before.
So the person paying the taxes doesn't get any service out of this at all, do they?
No.
Uh-uh. Yeah. That's not my case, or his case. Yeah, I mean, the problem is since I live in New York City, I mean, I was never going to win custody of my kid. And frankly, being part of New York City, Joe was so smart of moving out of here 20 years ago New York City is very terrifying to a kid, definitely, you know, one that you want to be educated and so forth. And, I mean, I've been listening to Joe's program for quite a while, so that's my opinion on everything.
Okay. James, I want to thank you very much. We have only about three...
We want a lot more opinion.
Yeah. James, if you don't mind, we have to conclude this... interview because we're going off the air in about 2.5 minutes, and I'd like to give Pat and Jack just a couple of minutes to alert our listeners as to where they can be found in their book and stuff like that. I'd like to thank you very much for calling.
Thanks for chatting with you too.
Yeah, James,
good luck to you, Jim.
If you'll email me to comments@libertytalkradio.com and send me your mailing address and T-shirt size, I'll make sure that you get a Liberty Talk Radio T-shirt. Okay.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling
okay,
in.
Okay,
bye-bye now.
Pat, can I say something?
Go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, we have about 2 minutes, guys, so you can wrap it up. It's all yours.
All right, Jack.
Okay, 2 minutes. You can buy a copy of rabiesmom.com, rabiesmom at rabiesmom.com, amazon.com, any of the big bookstores. I just want to read the review here real quick. It says, from Deborah Gaynor, Book Review. Mr. Carroll, I offer you my condolences. I can only imagine the pain you have suffered. My first reaction to Rabies Mom was that the author was angry. Well, he has a right to be angry. Courts may say they rule in the best interest of the children, but that is not always true. The rulings are usually on the side of the mother. Pat and Janine Carroll had 6 children together. Their marriage was rocky. It is unfortunate couples continue having children when their marriage is not stable. Divorce was imminent. Janine appears to be more unstable than the marriage. She has an affair with Sam, the handyman. After Sam dies, possible suicide, possible murder. She has an affair with his best friend, an ex-con Jimmy. Between alcohol and drugs, she is strung out most of the time. The oldest children come to live with Pat. The younger children are raising themselves without supervision. They are living in poverty. Shannon contracts rabies after being bitten by a bat. Tragically, she dies. Pat shares a story of her illness. His heart-wrenching pain is evident. Concerned with the welfare of his youngest children, he seeks custody. The fight is a slow, uphill battle in a court system that rarely respects fathers. It is difficult to remain objective after reading this book.
Okay.
My heart aches for the children. I have little compassion for a mother that places herself first. Pat Carroll has presented his side of the sad story. He does so in an emotionally charged manner. His triumph should bring home to other fathers fighting for their rights. This book is a must-read for anyone seeking custody of their children.
Okay. Gentlemen, we got about 40 seconds left, so we need to conclude this conversation. Guys, I truly enjoyed this conversation. I feel like I know you guys for a long time already. I really enjoyed speaking with you guys. I wish you all the luck in the world, Pat and Jack. Anything the station can do, please call on us. We hope that the book sells well and that your foundation does find its purpose and, you know, its purpose is fulfilled. I want to thank you very much for being our guest. And if you just let me know your email address, I'll send you two guys Liberty Talk Radio T-shirts. You certainly did deserve them.
Great.
Okay. Well, thank you, Joe, and thank you for listening to our story, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Good night, gentlemen.
Joe.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye.
All right, this is the, wow, that was a very, very interesting conversation, wasn't it? This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com, and remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. And remember, don't steal. The government hates competition. Folks, our next scheduled program will not be Thursday morning as usual. I'll be out of town again on Thursday morning, so I'm going to broadcast Wednesday morning. It'll be on my blog, Wednesday morning, 6:30 a.m., and I'm going to talk a little bit about immigration, but a different point of view. I want to give you my experience being among people who do not speak English and a couple of conversations that I had that I think you'll find fascinating. We'll talk about that, anything else you want to talk about, as well as some other important current issues. Folks, thank you very much for listening to Liberty Talk Radio. This is your host, Joe Cristiano. Stay well. Stay tuned.